Patrick Henningsen Talks on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to TNT, today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. Thank you for joining us for this live broadcast on Thursday. It's going to be a powerful program. We've got a few guests who are going to join us to talk about some very important stories that are breaking around the world. Just a few minutes, we'll be connecting with our research assistant for the show, Miles of Truth, for an update on the WHO pandemic treaty. There's been a little movement on this. In other words, we've learned a little bit more. Miles is going to share some of the details with us. It seems clear, however, that the WHO, Dr. Tedros, they're taking rear guard action right now, and it seems that they were spooked by the amount of pushback on this, and a lot of the pushback coming from the alternative media. So we can all pat ourselves on the back for that collective effort. You don't need orders from headquarters, ladies and gentlemen. You just get out, you dig, you talk, you share the information, and this is how it works. It's how it's always worked, and this is how it's going to continue to work. That's how you raise awareness. Look at him panicking. I'll share some of those stories with you. There's mainstream panic articles, official panic articles from the WHO. Dr. Tedros is in retreat on this. They're all screaming. The fact checkers are going mad. They're saying, no, there's nothing. There's nothing here. It's all conspiracy theorists talking about an end run around national state sovereignty regarding global health and so-called pandemic policies. Nothing to see here. Move along, ladies and gentlemen. It's just the conspiracy theorists. So says the elite, who are gathering at Davos for an update on Davos, some insights on the shenanigans going on up there in the mountains of Switzerland, where the great and the good meet to decide what should happen to the rest of us, to the plebs, to the useless eaters. This is what Davos is, the World Economic Forum. They know best. They'll figure it out. We need to put our trust in them, and they will instruct our governments what policies they need to implement and what to do with all the meddlesome people out there who are asking questions, people who are wanting to have the best for their families, for their communities, for their countries, people who believe in their national sovereignty. These people are problematic, according to the great and the good at Davos. They want to do away with all that. And they want to bring in this fourth industrial technocracy. So we'll get an update from Basil Valentine, who's going to join us in second hour. Looking forward to that conversation. He's got some insights and observations on what Davos is up to. And in the third hour, the story that's just, of course, dominating the headlines in the United States is the Texas school shooting. So another week, another mass shooting. And we'll have to bring in one of our best experts on this. It has to be Hesher, host of The Boy of the Room over at Alternate Current Radio. Nobody else really understands the genre of mass shootings in the depth that he does. And so we're going to bring him on the third hour to break this down. Now, this one is a school shooting. It's obviously going to draw comparisons to Sandy Hook because of the amount of casualties, fatalities. On this, it's a school shooting. The shooter is very strange indeed. He supposedly is no longer with us, apparently shot dead. So he will not be testifying, or we will learn very little about him. And I'm sure what's worth learning about an assailant of this caliber, or probably some inconvenient truths about society, about real problems that are happening around the country. Talking about the U.S., they seem to have a particular problem with the mass shooting genre. It's not necessarily because of the fact that people are allowed to own guns in America, as we have commented many times on the show. The overwhelming majority, nearly all of the gun violence that we see in the U.S. is somehow connected with illegal procurement, use, or storage of firearms. And so that also is the case here. We found an interesting detail that we'll be sharing in the third hour with this. And some new revelations have come forth on this Texas school shooting that do raise a lot more questions than answers. Let's just put it that way. The story we heard yesterday was not the full story. We're going to share the full story with you in the third hour. We have some new information that's just breaking, and we will have Hesher, host of the Boilerroom, with us to help break some of that down. Now, those are all big stories. Yes, we're going to cover those in depth, but there's other things going on. Another big breaking story that I think is worth pointing out is, especially in light of the fact that Davos and the World Economic Forum is on, you've got Bill Gates, one of the richest guys in the world, and he personally, according to this article, which was originally published by Breitbart News, he has poured millions of dollars, exactly how much it's unclear, but according to this report, hundreds of millions of dollars to numerous groups that are behind a campaign pushing advertisers to boycott Twitter if Elon Musk takes over. So that's a big, big time cancel operation by Bill Gates. Why would Bill Gates want Twitter to fail? Why would he want to sabotage Elon Musk's hostile takeover of this major social media platform? Well, apparently Bill Gates is worried that there will be too much free speech on Twitter. Can you believe this? So we have billionaires who are literally throwing money at all these different sort of soft power. I'll call this dark money, because if this wasn't published, we wouldn't really know about it if this report hadn't made it to air. Notice this was broken originally on Breitbart, which is still ostensibly an alternative media outlet, although there's some big money behind it, you know, the Mercer family, etc. It's still alternative in the sense that it's not regarded as papers of record or anything like this, as we talked about with Greg Mayberry on Tuesday, when we discussed the New York Times, the mainstream media, and the sort of systematic institutional corruption that pervades that section of the press. Breitbart's still sort of alternative. So if they didn't run this, it probably would not have made it. It probably would not have made it to the public conversation. And that raises a whole nother issue. So that kind of, in a way, validates what Elon Musk is saying. And by the way, I realize Elon Musk is supposedly, on paper anyway, the richest man in the world, and that he might not be a knight in shining armor riding over the hill to save us from the totalitarian dystopia that is currently taking over our online public squares, digital public squares. Nonetheless, he wants to have more free speech on Twitter. Okay, that's fine. I don't agree and don't support a lot of his other activities, like providing satellite uplinks to Nazis in Mariupol, which he was caught doing, apparently, at least by his own tacit admission on his soon-to-be, or maybe not, social media platform Twitter, regarding the Azov battalions in Azovstal. Starlink, I believe that's his company, and he provided them with, well, looks like they got some kit, you know, some equipment, routers, things like that, to be able to communicate with the outside world. Thank you, Elon Musk, for helping the Nazis. But nonetheless, he wants to open up Twitter for more free speech. So there you go. That's an interesting story. What will Bill Gates not spend to get his way? What will Bill Gates not spend to get his way? There's just something Blofeldish about all this. You got the richest man in the world, and he's what? He's throwing money around at all his pet projects. He's got unlimited cash, apparently, through his foundations, spreading it around, paying off people. He's paying off the World Health Organization, arguably handpicked this terrorist in charge of the WHO, Dr. Tedros from Ethiopia, arguably handpicked by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and Big Pharma. Bill Gates is fronting the R&D for vaccine development for the COVID-19 experimental gene jab. He fronted all the R&D, fronted the money to get the factories up and running, right? Immediately. So he's got a major stake in pushing out experimental gene therapy jabs and twisting the arms of government public health officials to make them mandatory. You're right. Yeah, billionaire doing that. Now, if that was the plot of a movie, you add all this up, you do the checklist, and it doesn't look good. It looks like a Blofeld. You know, it looks like a Blofeld type power play. And I thought that was just movies. I didn't realize a private individual could exercise that level of control and manipulation over the most sensitive nodes of society and doing it in a global way and pushing for the globalization of public health. And in Davos right now with his cohort led by Herr Schwab, advocating for global government. That's effectively what they're doing. They might say they're not, or if pressed, they might deny it, wave their hands in the air and say, no, we're just trying to make the world a better place. No, they want to systematize everything. They want to globalize everything. One health, one approach, one single digital currency, or various digital currencies that are basically doing the same thing. One climate policy. Everything, one size fits all. One vaccine for the, quote, next pandemic. We'll get into all this in a minute. Let's take a break here with TNT, Today's News Talk, and hopefully we'll catch up on the other side with our research assistant for the show, Miles of Truth, an update on the WHO pandemic treaty. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. We'll be right back after these messages.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa. Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
The 2020 election was the most secure in U.S. history.
There has been no evidence of widespread voter fraud.
He lost a fair and secure election.
The most secure
election in American history.
Really?
All those of you who volunteered and worked the polls, you deserve a special thanks from the entire nation.
This one mule made 53 trips to 20 drop boxes. He's not alone. We tracked 2,000 mules making multiple ballot drops. Leaving no fingerprints. Snapping photos to get paid. A coordinated ring of illegal vote harvesting in all the key states where the election was decided.
They've delivered us a clear victory.
Game over.
Stream May 8th at Salem Now or Locals.
Freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom of choice, freedom of assembly, freedom of health. The voice of freedom is TNT Radio.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. TNT, Today's News Talk. I'm here with our research assistant for the show, Miles of Truth, joining us on the line. We talked last week. Miles was kind enough to give us a good entree, a good introduction into what's going on with the WHO, the World Health Organization's pandemic treaty. This is the thing that a lot of people are talking about. There's been a lot of pushback, apparently pushback that's not welcome by the WHO themselves. They're already complaining about that. We'll talk about that a little bit with Miles. How you doing, Miles?
Oh, hi, Patrick. Thanks for having me again. I'm very well, thank you.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, we broke that topic open last week, Miles. Obviously, everybody was talking about that. It's been a little bit kind of pushed to the side because of the big school shooting in the United States. But Davos is, you know, they're convening, they're having their confab this week up in the mountains of Switzerland and the Swiss Alps. They're working all of their various agendas and plans. They're talking about everything that they want to have coming down the pipeline. And there's been a lot of pushback on this WHO pandemic treaty. A lot of people have taken notice of it. A lot of politicians on a certain side of the aisle are not happy about it. They're pushing back on it. So there's just, I think generally there's a lot of skepticism out there. Miles, you've also been, you know, continuing your following the thread of this story. I think you probably discovered a few more extra things that you might be able to add to what we talked about last week. Put us in the frame again. Just give us a quick synopsis of what we learned last week and where things are at and what new things you've discovered on this.
Sure, no problem. Okay, last week, I one of the things I was saying was that it's confusing, right? This talk of a treaty, a pandemic treaty, is sort of confused and conflated with this IHR, the IHR amendments, which is the International Health Regulations. And that's, the pandemic treaty itself is a ways off. It's still being drafted, but this IHR is sort of a similar sort of thing because it's legally binding, international law by the World Health Organization that sort of dictates how the WHO and, you know, declares pandemics and their surveillance and management of the national responses and so on. So it is a question of sovereignty. So I do think people are still a bit confused about that, the pandemic treaty versus the IHR amendments.
But Miles, do you think this is a case of, you know the old saying, follow the ball, not the man in sports? A lot of people are following the pandemic treaty, but they're not following the ball. And you're saying that possibly the ball here is the IHR regulations, which are legally binding.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are calling the IHR amendments, they're calling it pandemic treaty, or they're bringing it under that sort of banner, that label, when I'm seeing that they are working on an actual pandemic treaty, but it's still getting going. It's not really, there's nothing to worry about yet because we don't know anything about it yet. It's not been drafted. But I do find it worrisome because one thing that I have read is that even though they're bringing these amendments to the IHR, they're saying the pandemic treaty is necessary because the IHR is insufficient. So whatever the IHR is doing, they want more. They want more control, and that's going to be in the treaty that's upcoming. But anyway, yes, since last week, I mean, the World Health Assembly is meeting now, I believe, or I think today might be the last day.
Yes.
But yes, it appears, well, some corners of the independent media are reporting that 12 of the 13 amendments submitted by the USA have been dropped and that they're not up for consideration at this time anymore. And that left one, and this was to do with shortening the timescales for how quickly the changes would be implemented. And this has been reported, you know, in the New American, a few others. James Roguski, he's the guy who originally brought attention to these RHR amendments. He's reporting on it. And this, it's sort of an interesting story. These reports of the changes being dropped trace back to this, this fellow, Zach Cox. He's a British dentist and sort of natural medicine practitioner. And he's part of the World Doctors Alliance with some of our friends, Dolores Cahill, Scott Jensen, Andrew Kaufman, and Vernon Coleman. He's part of that group. But he brought a legal proceeding against the UK government over these proposed IHR amendments. And he got a response from a government lawyer who I believe was from the Department of Health in Britain here. And this letter said, well, your claim is invalid because the amendments, 12 of these 13 amendments have been dropped. They're not being considered right now. So some people are questioning the veracity of this, saying, well, we haven't actually seen the letter and whatever. But there was a Reuters story that I've just seen that sort of that does sort of confirm this and say that most of the amendments are not to be considered.
Isn't that a popular sort of government kind of get out clause that we've seen before, Miles, where they might sort of, you know, sideline part of the agenda because the spotlight's on it, and then go back to whoever the opposition is and say, hey, nothing to see here. These aren't even coming into force. You know, what are you so concerned about? Nothing's going on. And then meanwhile, go behind the scenes and work out another route to get those various regulations or agenda items into position, but through another way. Maybe they'll do it later. Maybe they'll do it through another agreement. But what do you think about? Do you think the government is? It seems like there's a lot of people that are kind of backpedaling on this, Miles.
Yeah. No, I was just getting to that. yeah, I mean, it does appear to me right now that this is right, that they're not going to consider all these amendments at the current time. But also there appears to be other amendments that have been submitted. And it looks kind of like the U.S. amendments that were proposed have been replaced by another set of amendments that has been submitted by on a more multilateral basis by a group of countries. Including the U.S. and the changes are not as radical, but that's still being submitted. I also read somewhere that Russia has proposed some amendments to it. So it looks like right now, I mean, I see the danger going forward in that they're not going to. I don't think they're going to pass anything now. They may pass that one amendment, but what they're probably going to do, in my opinion, is form a sort of working group or a committee that is just, you know, a standing committee, meaning their whole job going forward is to consider changing this, the IHR, and to just keep submitting changes and so on for, you know, an indefinite period to come. So you could say that's just them not giving up, and they're just going to try and pass it in other ways.
And what are those changes? Do you think what do you think their long range objectives are? What are the main sort of items that they want to tick off and make happen, in your opinion?
I think general strengthening of global biosecurity arrangements, meaning specifically centralizing power in the World Health Organization. We were talking last week that one of the important changes is to the original U.S. amendments was that they wanted to take out a part of the clause that dictates how pandemics are declared, that forces the Director General of the World Health Organization to consult with the country in question. So they removed that clause, and now it just says, well, it's up to the Director General. So that's if that sort of change passed, it would give complete unilateral authority to the Director General of the World Health Organization to declare pandemics or public health emergencies. And, you know, without even consulting the country, which you could see how that's not ideal, to put it kindly.
Not at all, especially considering who the Director General is. But look, I don't even want to get into the argument about, because a lot of people are, oh, we need to remove this Dr. Tedros. He's a bad apple. You know, he's a wrong end. He's handpicked by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. All of that might be true, Miles, mm-hmm. but there's another a growing lobby of people of opposition that are looking at the World Health Organization as an institution and saying that needs to be defunded. Now, Donald Trump, when he was president, pulled funding from the WHO, if you remember. right when around when the COVID pandemic hit. And it's one of the first acts of Joe Biden was to, you know, reinstate the funding and hand over the $500 million or whatever the U.S. Puts into their coffers. So Gates is the second biggest funder. So I think now the U.S. government is number one. Gates is number two. Chinese government is number three. And there's a whole sundry of other supports below that. But like the CDC, it's very much enmeshed with the transnational pharmaceutical industry. They've got a lot of sway and power in there. They've got their people in there as well. There's a little bit of a revolving door with the WHO and the pharmaceutical industry. That's kind of undeniable at this point. But yeah, looking at the organization as a whole, there's a lot of people arguing, and that's another thing, that it's easy to scapegoat an individual that might be embroiled in some scandal. But there's a lot less people, I think, questioning the existence of the organization. Like, what is its original purpose? And that's a conversation that I think is very interesting. Why was it started? What was its original remit? What has it become? And by what you're saying, Miles, it's turned into something like a giant, a monster compared to its former iteration.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. One thing I was thinking about following our discussion last week was just, well, how, if we wanted to oppose this, how do you do it? Because this is all going on in an unelected body, right? The World Health Assembly. The World Health Assembly delegates, however, and there's a delegation from every member state. It's made up of the health ministries or the health ministers of the member states. So our health minister here in Britain is Sajid Javid, and he's the head of the Department of Health. So the Department of Health sends a delegation and so on. But it's a bit murky who the actual delegates are. He himself did go to the World Health Assembly, but I think only for one day. And then he's got some underlings, you know, doing the actual voting for him on the other day. So how you actually lobby those people or even find out who they are, it's a bit unclear. It's very out of touch with the people, I would say. But yeah, the World Health Organization, has become a bit of a monster. And, you know, like all of these global things, like I'm saying, you can't, you haven't voted for these people. They're not lobbying you for the next election. You know, they don't owe you anything because you're not voting for them. I find it very worrying that, you know, how are we supposed to oppose these things?
Well, this is what you're describing there, Miles, is really a classic technocracy.
Yeah.
So it's ruled by experts. Who are these people? So you're saying Javid, Health Secretary of the UK, goes to the World Health Assembly. That's their big, you know, confab, right?
Yep.
Where all these sort of decisions and motions are made and voted on. And he doesn't even vote. Like, he just shows up, does a few photo ops, you know, presses the flesh a little bit, and then he's back on a plane to wherever, Davos or back to the UK. So who's actually doing the actual work there? We don't know.
Yeah.
It's completely kind of unaccountable in terms of, and like, what about the opposition? How come there is no opposition? So there's no political opposition to any of this that I can see, Miles.
It's not even being discussed.
Yeah.
In the press or anything. I mean, this is, well, it does get mentioned. Like I said, there was one or two Reuters stories about it, but, you know, they were pretty small stories. I don't think they got a lot of notice.
I think you saw this because we shared this before the show. This was a Washington Post story. The headline goes like this. It was from a couple of days ago. Global health talks clouded by conspiracy theories about the pandemic treaty. Global health leaders gathered in Geneva on Sunday to discuss the pandemic, and they're facing another viral problem. They're calling it a visceral, passionate online backlash that falsely accuses the World Health Organization of conspiring to take power from national governments. There it is. In the first paragraph, Miles said that this, they're decrying this conspiracy theory, but I think it's actually true. But they're attempting to do their usual gaslight routine, the mainstream media, saying, look, this is ridiculous. What do you mean, taking power from national governments? This is a crazed conspiracy theory. This is tinfoil hat territory. It's right there, Miles. First paragraph of the article in the Washington Post, with Tedros looking very confused. It's a funny photograph of Tedros. He's just kind of gaping up in the air. It's such a fitting photograph, actually.
Yeah, that was one story, but I don't, not sure. I mean, yeah, I think that's for the American audience to consume, you know?
Yeah.
If you look at other countries' press, I mean, there was a Reuters story a day or two back about how some African countries are resisting these amendments.
Yeah.
And in particular, Nigeria is mentioned. I looked into this a little bit, looked up some Nigerian articles, and they are surprisingly switched on to the whole question of, you know, sovereignty, world government, dictatorial, you know, health regimes, all that. And this seems to be in the Nigerian mainstream press that they're openly saying this is dangerous, you know, for these reasons.
Listen, African countries are catching up. I think Africa has benefited massively from the digital media revolution, you know, in terms of them being able to consume and analyze what's going on around the world, and then seeing, because normally before this, Miles, you know, if you're in Africa, well, they're just as helpless, if not more so, than we were in media 1.0, in that there's, you know, a few people had a lock on the information, and that was it. It was very easy to propagandize and funnel people, you know, down various, like, there is no alternative policy routes, right? Now, a country like Nigeria, that's not a small player. That, you know, that's 200 million plus people there over in West Africa. They've got resources. They've got a little bit of clout, at least in Africa. They've got oil. And they're wanting to exert their national sovereignty. They don't want to be told, you're going to have to lock down. You're going to have to shut down all your businesses. You all got to get vaccinated. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to travel. They don't want to deal with that. They've got enough social problems as it is in those countries. They don't want to be lorded over by a globalist institution like the WHO. So they're pushing back a little bit. People are like, no, I don't think so. They're skeptical about pandemics. Certainly, I'm seeing that in South Africa. I'm seeing that skepticism in Tanzania. I'm seeing it in Ghana. I'm seeing it in other countries. So Africans on the whole are much less trusting of the diktats coming out of places like Switzerland and New York and Brussels than we are. So it kind of makes sense, Miles. You know, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, no, I understand. I see what you mean. I mean, if anyone's going to be, you know, recognize an attempt to subjugate them, it's probably the people who've been subjugated for so long. But yeah, I am. I do feel a little bit like relieved that it appears that all these amendments are not going to sail through like was first reported. You know, it was, for the past few weeks, I've been reading that this was expected to just be passed. But then today, just preparing for the show, I found an article that said that if they do vote on anything during this assembly now, it's actually against their own rules of the World Health Organization, because any amendments need to have 4 months for the assembly delegation to consider it before voting on it. And that's not the case with the amendments as they currently stand. So I feel like there's no sort of indication in any of these articles that the U.S. is particularly embarrassed or that they faced a, you know, a loss here of sorts, but that's kind of what it looks like to me. They tried to get these things through and it got there, and not just the conspiracy theorists, but other countries and other, you know, some of the delegations from these national governments are just like, whoa, 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 this is too much, you know, slow down.
Wow. Wow. So there's a little bit of a ray of positive light there. And yeah, we'll break this down a little bit more after the break. I'm here with Miles of Truth, research assistant for the show. Fabulous insight into this story Miles has brought us. We're going to take a break here with TNT. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. We'll be right back after these brief station messages.
Be afraid. Be very afraid. World Economic Forum President Klaus Schwab has said the future is built by the elites at Davos.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Let's also be clear. The future is not just happening. The future is built by us, by a powerful community as you here in this room. We have the means to improve the states of the world.
Yes, that's right. Klaus Schwab announcing to the world that he has the means to improve the world and that they are in charge of your life. Did anyone vote for Klaus Schwab? This is all part of the Great Reset. You will owe nothing and you will be happy. All your food will be delivered by drones. You will not eat meat. You'll have no privacy, but you'll like it. Welcome to Serfdom 2022. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
Emergency, police fire or ambulance?
Yeah, I'm just passing through.
Police fire or ambulance?
I can see a whole lot of smoke.
What town are you calling from?
I'm on a mobile phone.
I need the town?
Yeah, there it is. I can see flames. There appears to be a kid or something at the window.
It's okay.
You guys are better out. This is serious.
Hello?
000's sole job is to connect you to emergency services. If you stay focused and just answer the prompted questions, you'll get help faster.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Solar power is supposed to help the environment. Modern economies require power 24/7, not just when the sun shines. And storing power is very expensive. Peak electricity demand in many nations with service-based economies occurs late in the day as the sun is setting. And cloud cover means we can never depend on solar power. Photovoltaic solar panel production is very resource intensive. Coal is the primary energy source used for photovoltaic panel production. And China, the world's biggest coal producer and consumer, produces two-thirds of the world's solar panels. While solar panels have a limited life of around 2 decades, some fail well before then. But nearly all solar panels currently go to landfill, as the cost of recycling is so high.
Telling the truth is the only mandate we believe in.
Today's
News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to TNT, today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. This is the Patrick Henningsen Show. We're into the first hour here, and we're joined by our research assistant for the show, Miles of Truth. And we're breaking down the WHO's global pandemic treaty here and getting really kind of an update when we sort of started talking about this last week, a week ago on the program with Miles. And then later, William Engdahl came on to add a little bit to that. There's been a few developments, of course. Miles has shared some of those with us. And again, I think one of the amazing things about this story as it's happening now, Miles, is how the mainstream media have suddenly, I mean, usually it takes them a while to sort of attack the conspiracy theorists. And the Washington Post, for instance, is highlighting Right Said Fred. And they're calling it this so-called they're quoting Right Said Fred's tweet here. This so-called pandemic treaty is the single biggest, greatest global power grab that any of us have seen in our lifetime. And they're calling them the 1990s English pop group, Right Said Fred, I'm Too Sexy for My Car fame. And they're decrying the fact that this was posted on social media and then it was amplified by a Scottish archaeologist and television host for the right-wing GB News. In other words, best-selling British author Neil Oliver, raconteur, he highlighted Right Said Fred's social media post on this. So they don't name, again, they don't name Neil Oliver. But I think it's amazing, Miles, that, again, I just can't believe they're actually elevating Right Said Fred, who before they would normally just brush off. They'd ignore them. They'd say, oh, it's just a bunch of crazies online. Look at that, an old washed up pop group from the 80s. What do they know about global public health? Well, now Right Said Fred's just got a huge, huge bump in traffic. They're getting a lot more attention, and their street cred, Miles, just shot up. They shot up because every time the mainstream media attacks, in other words, every time the media punches down, the establishment love punching down, whenever that happens, it only increases the street credibility of the persons or people they're punching.
It's like the Streisand effect.
Yeah, it is. It is. So Right Said Fred are just, they're flying right now. I mean, everybody's loving them. So, and rightfully so, you know, they've been outspoken about this for a very long time, just about COVID lockdowns in general. Yeah. So they deserve that street cred actually. So, hats off to the Washington Post, you know, for helping to elevate Right Said Fred. They won't name Neil Oliver because that probably scares them to a morbid level that they don't want to give Neil Oliver any additional oxygen. They name Bannon in here. They name some other people. Of course, Tucker Carlson. This is a sort of pinata by the American mainstream media. And Marco Rubio's even got a little bit of a swipe here. I mean, it's interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, one thing I wanted to draw attention to is this this article by Reuters. I mentioned it in the first segment there. But yeah, it talks about what is and isn't on the agenda, and this is where Reuters seems to confirm that these amendments are not going to go through, or they're not on the agenda the same way the U.S. submitted them. It's a little bit vague, but it's interesting what else they say is and isn't on the agenda. One of the things is the re-election of Dr. Tedros, which happened, I believe, yesterday. One of the other things is a discussion around the funding of the WHO. I don't know if you've been following this at all. But
no, tell us. This is interesting.
Apparently, an agreement has been reached to change the funding arrangements of the World Health Organization. And some of the rhetoric around it is like, well, the private donors have too much power, right? So the, you know, you would think Gates and that sort of donor, these private donors, that they're having too much power. And not only that, they can, when they make donations, they can specify this money is to be used on such and such a purpose, right? So Gates can donate however many million and say, well, this is to be used only for vaccine research or whatever. So that they're saying that ties the World Health Organization's hands over how they use their budget, and it's very limiting to them. So this is actually kind of encouraging that they're talking about this and trying to reform the funding of the World Health Organization in response to those sort of concerns. I have to take it all with a grain of salt and wonder what's really going on, but apparently they want to raise mandatory contributions from the member states to be at least half of the total budget.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
So right now I believe the mandatory contributions from the member states are pretty low. I think I read 16% or something. Yeah, 16%.
Wow.
So that means 84% of the WHO's total budget right now comes from private donors. It's not from member states. Well, that's pretty huge.
Wow. So that's amazing.
I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I take all this with a grain of salt, and I wonder what's really happening and what the real reason is for these, you know, people speaking up to reform this stuff. But it could be encouraging that there people are starting to voice opposition to this private donation system.
Yeah, I think what could be happening is there's some genuine, you know, concerned ethical people in the mix there, and they're probably raising this. And then maybe what the establishment do very well is they, like a hawk, they see this stuff happening, and then they go in and they try to steer it into a direction whereby there either will be a no major change to the status quo, just maybe a change of how things are labeled in order to be, you know, better public optics, let's say, or to reclassify certain donors in this case, and maybe give special status to foundations or, you know, people like Bill Gates and others like him, Pfizer, you got the Wellcome Trust. You know, these are things that are basically instruments of big pharma. But what's really interesting, Miles, is this, on the back of what you just said, and this is the thing that you won't see a lot of press on, although if it's used to demonize certain individuals that are kind of out of favor with the global establishment, Jair Bolsonaro, the president of Brazil, said, "There's no way I'm ever going to sign that treaty," and that made some headlines. But you know, beyond that, that's Brazil, right? If he is in any way reflecting the public mood in Brazil, that's a huge problem. That's the biggest, most powerful country in South America, a whole continent. China has also got some issues with this. There's a petition on Chinese social media. Basically, they don't want WHO to dictate Beijing's pandemic response. I mean, not that it could be any worse in China, you know what I mean? But still, so these are some powerful, Russia's also got some problems. The WHO is in danger of losing country like Russia, for instance. That's 100 plus million people. You know, a major, when you have people jumping ship, is what I'm saying, Miles, then a few people jump ship, and then you got a major crisis at the WHO, you see. So they've got a lot to manage here beyond what the media is saying are conspiracy theories. It's much bigger than that, Miles, isn't it?
I don't know. Just to bring it under the label of conspiracy theory, I just find it so unhelpful because it's such a, well, obviously it's a loaded term. It's meant to condition people to respond in a certain way when they hear it. But you know, it's so unhelpful because it doesn't change the fact of what's actually happening in front of you here. You can call it whatever you want, but that doesn't mean it's not happening. You know what I mean? but yeah,
they're calling him, someone was quoted here from Georgetown University, Lawrence Gostin, professor of global health law at Georgetown in DC. And he's commenting on the 2005 amendments to the, he's one of the consultants actually on the IHR amendments in 2005. He tweeted out that saying these countries basically saying they need to conform to global health norms is kind of what he's inferring. So this is the mode of thinking, Miles, isn't it? It's that we need a global health what they call norms, like the international rules-based order, but this extends to global health. What does this mean? Like these are such broad umbrella terms.
Well, I think it's typical globalist thinking, or the whole global problems require global solutions is what they say. So whatever the origin of the problem, it's the way they see it, it requires a international coordinated response. And who can do that but the World Health Organization? But yeah, I mean, let me go back to this Reuters article for a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
One of the things, it has a few lists of a few things that it says are on the agenda, and then off the agenda, there's a few items. And the first of those is COVID origins. So I didn't know this, but apparently the WHO has formed a panel, or asked one of its panels to investigate the origins of COVID-19, of SARS-CoV-2. That's not going to be on the agenda at this World Health Assembly, but they said the report would be released soon. So whatever that means, well, might be interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting.
But, and then it also has a part about the pandemic treaty, separate to the IHR. And it says it basically says it's a ways off. But it said it might include rules on vaccine sharing and a proposed ban on wildlife markets. So I don't know. That sounds a bit hinky to me. Sorry, that sentence about wildlife markets, what does that, do they really think that's going to have any effect on pandemics? I don't understand. Is this going back to the Wuhan bat thing?
It's the wet market talking point. I thought that was completely discredited, but it sounds like Miles, I mean, based on what you're saying here, it sounds like they're going back to the wet market, right?
I find that just stunning. I can't believe I'm reading this in Reuters. This is crazy.
I know. Should definitely share that link with me. But it's like there's a couple of theories floating around, Miles. You know, they're free floating. You got the Wuhan lab leak. You've got the wet market, and it's almost like if it remains ambiguous, then everybody can kind of maneuver within that ambiguity, right? It's almost like a better strategy not to nail it down. And just to keep everybody kind of guessing and paranoid, and then the Republicans are hating the Chinese because they're savages eating out of the wet markets, or their labs are leaking COVID, or whatever. You know, China destroyed our economy. We all heard that the last couple of years, especially if you listen to Sean Hannity or any of the Fox crowd. But I think they like the ambiguity. This is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no doubt. all right, that's about as much as I have. I don't know. I can't think of any other points I wrote down here.
No, that's great. That's great. I think we need to keep an eye on this, Miles, because I think this is, I think we got a hold of it here. You know, a lot of people have got a hold of this. They've got their jaw on it, and I don't think people should let go of this. You know what this reminds me of, Miles? It reminds me of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You know,
yeah.
When people got their hands on that and got their jaw on that, like a pit bull carrying that stick down the road, people didn't let go of it, and it ended up killing the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That was the fast track to total corporate domination. Now they're having to kind of do it another way. Via the World Health Organization, via the World Economic Forum, via some of these other global institutions, they didn't get that sort of fast agreement to nail it all down, because people found some problems with it and they just didn't let go. And then the opposition grew and grew. This reminds me of that, Miles. So this is an interesting battle that's forming here. So let's keep an eye on this.
Yeah, I agree. We'll do.
Well, look, that's been a fantastic report, Miles. We got Miles of Truth here, a research assistant for the show, breaking down the WHO pandemic treaty, which is kind of on the way, but actually there's other things in the meantime that are binding, that are real, that are happening. Decisions are being made at the World Health Assembly. That's their big confab, which ends this week, coinciding with Davos. So I'm sure the revolving door or the private jets can just hop just a couple of hundred miles away. Miles, they can take their helicopters and leave the World Health Assembly and be in time to catch the Facebook after party there at Davos and dance on the tables with Mark Zuckerberg and talk about the metaverse and uploading your consciousness into cyberspace. It's all wonderful, Miles, and we'll keep an eye on it. But thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Patrick. Appreciate it.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen, Miles of Truth. And look, we're going to break here with TNT, and we're going to connect with Basil Valentine for a little bit of a look inside Davos. Let's find out what the great and the good are actually up to this week at the World Economic Forum's annual shindig. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. This is TNT Radio. We'll be right back.